Thank you, Kelly. When I speak, I'd like to talk about things that other speakers have not been covering in the previous weeks. So I'm sure that everybody here by now knows that the PCR tests are unreliable and that all-cause mortality is within the normal range of variation. We know that. I want to talk about historical epistemology. That is, how we know what we know about history. Because we know that the present that's being sold to us by the media is a lie. It's full of inconsistencies and unbelievable events that don't fit together and don't make sense. But history is no better. And just like the present, we can lean all of the lies against each other until they all contradict each other and force them to collapse, leaving only the truth standing. I want to talk about history because the same families that are ruling over us now that think they can impose tyranny on us are the same families that have ruled for thousands of years. And once you can recognize a psyop, a psychological operation from 200 years ago, you won't fall for the same thing when they use the same script today. Because the methods they use have remained more or less unchanged for a very long time. The one thing that has changed is the technology they have access to set their schemes in motion. I'm not going to make any sweeping claims, such as that the historical chronology has been completely fabricated, and I'm not going to rely on any appeals to supernatural figures, demons, Nephilim, what have you, gods, in order to make my narrative make sense. I would say that history is a palimpsest. That's a word that means something that has been overwritten, but still retains traces of what was originally there. As Voltaire said, history is the lie that is commonly agreed upon. To set my narrative, I'm going to go back to 1200 BC. So that's the Bronze Age. And the dominant merchant sailing empire that was active at that time was the Phoenician Empire. They had formed an international trade network all throughout the Mediterranean and even out across the Iberian Peninsula and into Britain. Their main cities were Sidon, Byblos, and Tyre, which are still extant cities where Lebanon is today. But they also had trading posts all across the Mediterranean where they could sell their wares. They mostly dealt in luxury goods, especially what you may know as royal purple dye, which is made from the murex snail, the secretions of this snail, that was local to the region. In fact, that's where the name Phoenicia comes from. It comes from the Greek word for purple, for the Tyrian purple dye, named after the city of Tyre, that they sold. They used Lebanese cedar, and the cedar trees in Lebanon are enormous. They used these trees to build their ships. Around 1150 BC, the Mediterranean suffered the Late Bronze Age collapse, a sudden violent upheaval that destroyed empires all throughout the region. Mainstream historians give credit to this to mysterious sea peoples who they don't identify. But the only seafaring empire that was dominant at this time was the Phoenicians. You can trace Phoenicians because they founded Carthage in around 800 BC, and they founded Thebes in Greece as well. You can trace their influence through Cyrus the Great, who founded the Achaemenid Persian Empire, through the Peloponnesian Wars of ancient Greece, through the conquests of Alexander the Great, who destroyed the Achaemenid Persian Empire, through to the Punic Wars between the Roman Republic and Carthage, again founded by the Phoenicians, up through to the present day. Historians would have us believe that there have been countless empires that have risen and fallen throughout history. But for the past 3,000 years, it has mainly been the Phoenician Empire that has conquered and reconquered itself countless times, rising like the phoenix from its ashes. In fact, their symbol is the phoenix, and it is often depicted as a two-headed eagle, which can be seen in the heraldry of empire worldwide. You look up the coat of arms of the Holy Roman Empire, you'll see a double-headed eagle. Some people will say that it's the Vatican, or it's the Knights Templar, or it's the Jesuits, or the Freemasons, or the Illuminati that secretly run the world. It's none of them. All of these organizations were either created or later infiltrated by these Phoenician families, the merchant princes, you could call them, who run these trade networks. How did they come to rule? Through trade, through banking, through conquest, and most importantly, through intermarriage with other ruling families throughout the world that they traded with. To elaborate on the Knights Templar, they ran a large commercial infrastructure, again, commerce, throughout Christendom, and in fact, they developed an early form of banking. The real name of the Knights Templar, the full name, is the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon. If you've read the Bible, you will know that the Temple of Solomon was built with the aid of King Hiram of Tyre, a Phoenician. King Hiram provided cedar and teams of masons and architects to construct Solomon's temple. The role of the Knights Templar would later be taken over by the East India Company, the Hanseatic League, and other proto-capitalist organizations. I'm going to jump ahead to the Vatican. The Medicis were an Italian banking family in the 15th century, that's the 1400s, and they basically bankrolled the Renaissance, which is one of the few good things that these families have actually done throughout history. If only they would support real art now, instead of putting slash canvases in museums and having us live in concrete boxes. In 1513, Lorenzo de' Medici bought the papacy for his son Giovanni. Giovanni became Pope Leo X. The Medicis put four popes in the Vatican in this way, and they did everything they could to defile and despoil the Vatican and be as corrupt as possible. The Borgias, another Italian banking family, centered out of Rome, whereas the Medicis were in Florence, did the same thing a few decades earlier when they held orgies in the Vatican after buying the papacy for one of their sons. The reason they did this is because religion gets in the way of trade. Religion posits a morality that says you can't take advantage of people and that you can't commit usury, which is the charging of interest. Obviously, that gets in the way if you want to have an international trade network and defraud people, as is happening today. The reaction to all of this obvious corruption in the Catholic Church was the Protestant Reformation. But the leading players in the Protestant Reformation were the cousins of these southern Phoenicians that were defiling the church to begin with. John Knox, who founded Presbyterianism in Scotland, was a cousin of the ruling Stuart dynasty of Britain. John Calvin, who founded Calvinism, was instrumental in changing the contemporary definition of usury from charging of interest period, to the charging of excessive interest, thus allowing interest to continue to be charged within Christianity. The common people were rightly fed up with the Catholic Church, but their anger was redirected by the northern Phoenician cousins in order to mount a coup on the southern ones. So as with everything else, it is the elites fighting for dominance among their own families. And what we see, not being members of these families, is what happens afterwards. We see the after effects. We don't see what's really happening. All we see are like the shadows on the wall of the conflict that's happening behind closed doors. As the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century progressed, it began to displace the strategy of landed aristocracy for the strategy of industrialism. By 1848, there were revolutions all over Europe promoting republicanism. That is, the structure, the governmental structure of a republic, not the Republican Party of the US. It's different. Karl Marx published his manifesto, his Communist Manifesto, in 1848. This is not a coincidence. Marx was promoting a dictatorship of the proletariat and a class struggle against the bourgeoisie. He was funded by Engels, who was himself an industrialist from a family producing textiles. But what is not commonly known is that Marx was independently wealthy. His uncle was a Phillips, of the same Phillips family that owns Phillips Electronics. His wife, Jenny von Westphalen, was also a wealthy noblewoman. So why then were these wealthy industrialists promoting communism? That doesn't seem to be in their interests. Because they were controlling and misdirecting the opposition. Rather than Republican ideas, which may have been successful, they were promoting communism. They were setting the middle and lower classes against each other and promoting a dictatorship of the proletariat, which no one with any sense would actually want. That was set up as the ideal. We can see that Marx later took over the First International, which was a workers' organization, and he neutered it, and it later fell apart. This is what he was doing. He was infiltrating and making sure that these workers' revolutions were not successful. And this is why he's still lionized by the establishment today. He's still promoting the same misdirection 150 years later. With the rise of industry, we brought about technocracy. Technocracy, the rule through technology by so-called experts who know better than the public and can act on behalf of the public, telling them what to do because the public is not trusted to know better. In the words of Aldous Huxley, in the future we will have a scientific dictatorship, and education will truly work so that men and women will grow to love their servitude and not dream of revolution. No, there is no reason that a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown. That is the end goal of these ruling families. I have shown you how their strategy has evolved throughout history. That is their end goal, and we are in the final stages of this now. The only reason these lockdowns have worked is because people are contented with their bread and circuses, because they have Netflix at home, and because they can order in food on Uber Eats. The only reason we have over 90% compliance with these mask mandates is because people are glued 24 hours a day to the media, which tells them over and over again to wear their masks and to be afraid. Woo! But do not be led astray by false idols who speak out from one side of their mouths against COVID, but with all of their efforts push forward this agenda in their actions. Elon Musk has spoken out against COVID, but at the same time, he's promoting Neuralink, which seeks to create microchip brain implants for anybody who wants it. This is the essence of transhumanism, combining with machines. And if we allow the transhumanist agenda to come to fruition, it will be the end of freedom, it will be the end of humanity as we know it. And I haven't talked about the East in this yet. I'm more familiar with the European history. But don't be led astray thinking that China is its own power who's seeking its own ends. It is a fully owned subsidiary of the Phoenician Empire. You can trace this back to the Opium Wars in the mid-19th century when the British used their naval power, gunboat diplomacy as it's called, to force China to accept their opium imports and demoralize and drug the population. Later on, in the end of the 19th century, the Rockefellers came in with the intention of displacing traditional Chinese medicine in favor of their own allopathic medicine, which I think we can all agree has been a great success on their part. Xi Jinping's handler is Robert Lawrence Kuhn. You can look him up. He's from the Kuhn banking family. He's written many books on China and where China will go in the future, and has been instrumental in bringing bread and circuses to China. The first president of South Korea, Syngman Rhee, was educated in Harvard and met Theodore Roosevelt. So he was also being controlled by the same Western powers as Mao was. Mao was funded by international banking interests, and Mao had his troops trained by OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, that was the precursor to the CIA. Later, Kissinger under Nixon came in and opened up more trade with China. China was rapidly industrialized under Mao's reign, with horrible effects on the actual population. And you can see the same pattern of industrializing countries in this way. In fact, Japan suffered the same fate when in 1854, it was opened up again through gunboat diplomacy by Admiral Matthew Perry, who opened it up for trade with the West. The Meiji Restoration then followed, which was a period of rapid industrialization in Japan, when Japanese society came to be controlled in large part by family-owned monopolies called zaibatsu, which were basically industries that were owned by one family. So the elites have a vision for what they want to bring about in the world. It's a vision of Mordor as seen to the eye of Sauron, but it is there and it is coming. Do we have a vision? We cannot afford to simply react to their plans. We need to be proactive in bringing about a future that we would all want to live in.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean a return to the old normal, which was not normal in any sense of the word. It means we need a vision for something positive that we can try to bring about. Something for our kids. We need to gather with like-minded people whom we would be proud to call fellow citizens. The people walking down the street in their masks are too far gone to help us. You cannot save people who do not want to be saved. We need to voluntarily separate from them before they drag us off a cliff running blindly like lemmings in their ignorance. To do that, we need to pool our resources. We cannot afford to be scattered everywhere where we can be singled out and taken out one by one. It's too easy to break up a small group. The reason that people, that certain places in the US have been able to resist this agenda as much as they have is because they as a community have the same values and their sheriffs are not willing to execute the undemocratic, illegal orders that their governors are pushing forth. You can do this in various ways. You can start living more closely with other people. You can start only shopping at businesses that share your ideas. Because as we've seen with Adamson Barbecue, people who are normies, they're not even gonna go to him anymore. His actions have destroyed their trust in his business, but they've not destroyed our trust.
Yeah.
So, see if you can begin living more closely. Live together, buy property, and not in a communist sense, but live more closely together where you can defend yourselves. We need to be able to defend ourselves. And to bring the cops on our side, we need to offer them an incentive to actually join with us. What incentive to join with us is there if they're going to lose their jobs and ultimately we could possibly lose? I'm not going to sugarcoat things and say that we're going to win because God is on our side. That's naive. We need to actually fight. And we need to fight in a way that's going to work. We need to offer them incentives to join with us. If we could offer them a paycheck, if we could offer them that they could be police in our communities and not have to do immoral things and commit immoral acts and bow to overlords who they don't respect, then they might actually do it. Ultimately, it comes down to strength in numbers. If we are scattered, we can be broken up easily. If we unite like this, then we are much stronger. Thank you.